That would help. Today is Yud Aleph Kislev, the 11th day of Kislev. Doesn't mean much to you, Alex. I don't think it means much to you, Aviva. To your side, on my mother's side. So, with your permission, I'd like to dedicate this year all the words of Torah, not the stupidity, the words of Torah, to my maternal grandmother, Racha Rachavi, who passed away on this day so many years ago. So many, even me standing before you here today, with barely any hair left on my head, I was not privileged to know her. She passed away at her parents' wedding, and even obviously prior to my own coming into the world.
You know the day because your parents maintained the memory?
Absolutely, every year,
I don't know the day of my
No, there's no question that in my family, Yortzites are indeed part of the family culture, and therefore we do maintain the Yortzite in every way that we can. So first of all the words of Torah are dedicated to the memory of Rachel Bat Yitzchak Alevi, my maternal grandmother. Just a word about my grandmother, because I don't like dedicating shiurim to people that you don't know of, just to names, because names are like malachim. Everyone thinks everyone's the same. All right, a name here, a name there. Just a word about her. She was born in a village near Lodz, Poland. She made Aliyah to Israel in the 30s, was on a kibbutz here, was part and parcel of building the land prior to the state of Israel, raised a family of four children, eventually made it to the States.
Your mother was born?
My mother was born here and left when she was 4 years old, and another one that returned to Israel with the family in 1988, and that's why, Alex, I'm sitting before you today. Now, just a word about my grandmother that would lead us into the shiur. Again, I was not privileged to know her personally, but I'll give you one story about her, and therefore we'll go right into the shiur. My grandmother, I don't think, necessarily learned in a Torah institution for women of the time. That wasn't exactly accepted in Poland in the 20s and the 30s. There was Beis Yaakov starting to come on the scene, but it just started to come on the scene. And yet she was a deeply religious woman. Deeply religious does not necessarily mean that she ultimately looked in the Shulchan Aruch and behaved that way, but rather her Judaism was from the culture that she accepted personally and obviously was given to her in her mother's milk when she was a girl. That meant things that perhaps in our days we'd say this is not necessary, and yet she did it. For example, she used to clean for people. She used to clean the wall. She used to clean like you wouldn't believe, and all the stories I hear about her cleaning for Pesach are not in the Shulchan Aruch. But that was part of parcel of what we call the Jewish, healthy Jewish intuition. Women go crazy before Pesach. That is the Jewish custom. More than that, on Shabbos, Yom Tov, she would make many, many different beautiful, delicious foods from scratch. Everything you usually eat, from gefilte fish to kishke, real kishke, of course. She would sew it up with a needle, and she would make kishke for Shabbos, real, real kishke, the stuff that you can't buy anymore because it's illegal. And that leads me into my shiur today.
Illegal. What's illegal about kishke?
It's not healthy to eat the kishkes of the animal, obviously. And that leads me into the shiur today, and I'd like to discuss kishke, and I'd like to discuss kishke in light of what we've been experiencing in the last few weeks in the parshas, and what we will experience later on as we continue through the year. Intestines of the animal.
What's inside the...
You don't want to know, Bruce. If you don't know better, you don't.
If she was sewing it, it probably wasn't a kishke. It was called a
helmet. Yeah, it could be.
Because the helmet was just the bigger skin on the neck. And it was out of it.
I could
and
be...
It was already formed.
I stand corrected.
Right.
But this leads me into the shiur today.
My mother used to also do that.
You see, we have, in our community, I would say, two opposing factors that are always at our throats. On the one hand, we'd like to continue in the footsteps of our forebears, and on the other hand, the reality changed. So, how do we do that? How can we, on the one hand, continue in the footsteps of our forebears, and on the other hand, be sensitive that the reality has changed? I think that if we were dressed like they did in Poland in the 30s, in the year 2011, even here in Efrat, we'd be a mockery. They'd laugh at us. They would. On the other hand, if we go ahead and we say everything that was is irrelevant, we're going to start a new religion, it's idol worship. That's not religion. Of the Jewish existence is Mesorah, is continuing the tradition of your forebears, is going from father to son, from mother to daughter throughout the generations. And therefore, we in our community are always feeling that we're constantly conflicted with this built-in conflict. On the one hand, continuing the tradition, and on the other hand, the reality has changed. And I'd like to today quote Rav Herschel Schechter that I've heard many years ago on this topic, and I find personally on the dotted line. Rav Herschel Schechter knows more Torah in his pinky than I'll ever know, so therefore he doesn't need my approval to anything. But since you want to know my opinion, I will tell you that I do stand on the dotted line, obviously, on this issue. Rav Herschel Schechter is a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, the Rosh Kollel. He's one of the two major postkim of the OU. Very known figure. And on this particular issue, I think this is exactly what it means to continue in the footsteps of your forebears. He said the parshas that we have been experiencing in the last few weeks. How did we start Shmoneh Esrei today? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Ve'Elokei Avoteinu. Continue, Bruce. There you go. Right, Aviva? Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzhak, Elohei Yaakov. Three forefathers. If you want a fancy word, patriarchs of the Jewish people, founders of the Jewish people. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Tell me, they were the same or different? Did they continue in the footsteps of the generation before, or didn't they? So Avraham's not a good example. He had no forebears who were Jewish. So Yitzhak, did he continue in the ways of Avraham? Answer, don't think too hard.
Yeah, for sure he did.
For sure he did, huh? He did a lot that Avraham did. He dug up the same wells that Avraham did. He gave him the same names that Avraham did, as his parsha told us. But the answer is no. He did not continue in the footsteps of his father, Avraham. How do I know this? Many aspects were the same. And yet, on the surface, he didn't. Avraham is faced with, and what does he do? He leaves and goes to
Egypt.
Yitzchak is faced with a famine. He's about to go to Egypt, following in the footsteps of his forefather Abraham. And God says, Al Tered Mitzrayma, do not go down to Egypt. What does Yaakov do, son of Yitzchak? Ra'av. What does he do? Sends his sons to Egypt. Eventually they come back. Sends them again. They come back. Yosef's in Egypt. Yaakov said, I want to see Yosef before I die. He ultimately dies in Egypt. He was brought to Israel like many people are. My grandmother was also brought to burial in Israel. She's buried in near Tel Aviv. Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov are faced with the same exact situation, and each one reacted differently. Avraham goes to Mitzrayim, Yitzchak doesn't, Yaakov does. No? The answer? Did they or didn't they follow in the footsteps of their forebears?
Both?
I think absolutely. Because I'd like to give you a definition of the word following the footsteps of your forebears. It means you continue the Mesorah, and yet perhaps the practical manifestation will be different. That's a fancy word, I think. Let me try to bring it down to earth, Alex. You continue in the footsteps of your forebears by continuing the tradition of the Jewish people. How you do it might be different. In other words, it could very well be that back in Poland, they have a mitzvah of onik Shabbos, of enjoying Shabbos. How did they do it? They had schmaltz with chopped liver and eggs. That's the way they got to onik Shabbos. They had a chopped liver with schmaltz and eggs. Well, we have a mitzvah of onik Shabbos because we continue in the footsteps of our forebears. It's the Mesorah. How do we get to onik Shabbos? Well, if we're going to eat schmaltz with eggs and chopped liver, first of all, it might be disgusting, because we're not used to that, and to onik Shabbos. And secondly, we know today that that is not healthy. That's just not healthy. Kishke was once considered great and wonderful, real kishke, and today the animal is very hard to get because it's not healthy. And therefore, we would have eaten it saying, oh, we do exactly what our forebears did. The answer is, you're not following in the footsteps of the forebears. At that time, they considered it A, delicious, and you may not, and B, they considered it healthy, and we know it's not. So what are we doing? We're continuing the tradition. We also want to get to Onik Shabbos, but we could perhaps get to Onik Shabbos by eating sushi. We could perhaps get to Onik Shabbos by eating turkey. Not schmaltz and eggs and chopped liver. It's the same mitzvah. It's the same exact mesorah. How it manifests itself could be different. So, Abraham is faced with the famine, he reacts one way. Yitzchak is also faced with the famine. But Yitzchak's reality is different from Abraham. Yitzchak was put on the Mizbeach. Rashi explains that therefore God told him, Al tered Mitzrayma, because he's like an Ola Tmima. He is like a Korban Ola, an elevation sacrifice, that ultimately is Nitzal, becomes Pasol, Michutzlim Komo, if you take it out of the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. So in this case, theoretically, before the Torah was given, but theoretically, the whole land of Israel were the confines of this Korban called Yitzchak. And he's different. And Yaakov is not an Ola Tmima. So he goes down to Mitzrayim. Yaakov's sons, they were all the same like Yaakov. They're considered the Shiftei Ka. They're considered the Shvatim, the tribes of the Jewish people. Did they follow exactly in the footsteps of Yaakov? The answer is an absolute, unequivocal no. And yes, yes, they continue the Masorah. Okay. Same Masorah, same Mitzvah, Vonik Shabbos, but maybe you eat different foods. Or dress. In Poland, there's a certain dress code that they kept in the 20s and the 30s. That was the fashion of the time. So the halacha is you're supposed to wear nice clothing for Shabbos. So they put on their nice clothing, whatever it might have been. It could have been a very long robe. Whatever it was, today, in the year 2011, you put on a very long robe, and you put on a fur hat, and you come into shul with it, they'll laugh you out of shul. We're not talking about strimals and bekishes. We're talking about a long coat and a fur hat. They'll laugh you out of shul. That's not the way we go ahead and fulfill this halacha. Same halacha. Manifested differently. We wear the Shabbos clothes that are mat'im for the reality in which we live. So Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are faced with the same exact reality, and they react differently, and so too the children of Yaakov are not the same. And you can see that in the brachos, in Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov gives a different bracha to each and every tribe. They're not the same, but they're all continuing the Mesorah in their reaction.
Well, a lot of them have some justifications actually over their lives. But I'm wanting just to play devil's advocate and how we deal with it. You said, coming you under the sun, that's your point, which sounds like you have to do exactly what your forefathers did, almost exactly. And then you have movements. They'll go to shul, but maybe they'll not walk there. Well, they'll do things right thing for them. They're going to try to keep things as best they can for their reality. And they change so much that we say, hey, you know, that's like, you can't do that. So where?
So I'll tell you where I put the line. First of all, regarding your first question, that there's nothing new under the sun, you're quoting from the book of Kohelet, which says that. And the same book of Kohelet, if, as you go further along. No, Kohelet, the book, is nothing new under the sun. That's not Kohelet, that's not the rabbi in Pressburg. No, he said, En Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. That's a point of view.
Right.
I'm personally not advocating that point of view here. But En Chadash Tachad Hashem is you're quoting Tanakh, you're quoting the book of Kohelet. And in the book of Kohelet, as you go through the Prakim, that's not presenting it. Eventually, Shlomo HaMelech, who wrote Kohelet, says something else at the end. He says, the last pasuk in Kohelet, if we can quote, Sof Davar Kol Nishma, end of the day, bottom line, I just wrote a long Kohelet, the longest Megillah, Et Elohim Yeravet Nusnav Shemor, Kizek Kol Adam. You have to fear God and keep His mitzvot. Now, if you fear God and keep His mitzvot, the way you're going to keep mitzvot in 2011 is going to be different than the way you kept mitzvot in the year 1511, because reality has changed. Torah is not detached from reality, but part of reality.
The Pressburg rabbi implied that Somehow, changes are dangerous.
He was fighting then against the reform, and he said that. I personally believe that if you look at the example of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you could see they kept the same Masorah, but it manifested itself differently. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to drive to shul on Shabbos, that's not keeping the same Masorah, because just like your forebears had an Isser of lighting a candle on Shabbos, when you ignite an engine, you have that same Isser. Now, they didn't have cars, that's correct. But now you're in a new reality, part and parcel of keeping not using your car. Now, they didn't have a car. Even if they did have a car, they of course, wouldn't use it. But ultimately, what I'm saying is, forget about the examples of Isurim. Just even the mitzvot say, how it manifests itself. I gave you an example of dress code. And food is different today than it was then, because we're living in a different reality, but it's the same Masorah. In other words, the test I always say is, if your forebear came back to your home and looked at the food you're eating and he had no idea what that was on the table, that's not what they used to eat back in the old country, and he'd look at your clothing, he didn't know who you are. But if you would say, I'm eating this L'chavot Shabbos for Onik Shabbos, he'd feel right at home. If your forebear cannot feel at home when you say a code word, Onik Shabbos, L'chavot Shabbos, Simchas Yontif, whatever the code words might be, then you're not continuing the Masorah. But if the code words are the same, and the manifestation might be a touch different, as long as, of course, it's within the confines of Halacha, not driving on Shabbos, ultimately, I believe that is the Jewish way. So yes, Avraham and Yitzchak continued in the Masorah, but it manifested itself differently. Now you want a more extreme example? You ready for this? This you better be sitting down for, because this is a typical example of a gentleman who was great, who was one of the major leaders of the Jewish people, and yet made a huge mistake according to the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows. You know the book of Joshua, Yehoshua? I have a certain love for the book of Yehoshua. I won't mention why. In the book of Yehoshua, Yehoshua marches into Israel, captures Jericho, 1, 2, 3, no problem. What happens on the next battle to Ai?
He loses 36 men.
He loses many men. He sits, bows down before God and says, how can you do this? You promised us that you were going to capture the land. Everything's going to be good if we keep the mitzvot. We're keeping the mitzvot. So God answers him, very nice. He didn't keep the mitzvot. There's a guy named Achan, and Achan took from the Cherim, and you made a Cherim on Yericho, and therefore all the Jewish people have to suffer. That's what it says in the Pshat of the Tanakh. And they find Achan, they kill him, and then they capture Ai. Right? You all know the story. The Gemara comes along and says, Yehoshua says, excuse me, God says, Atagaramta, you caused the sin. Yehoshua says, me? I didn't do anything. God says, yes, you did. You made a cheirim on Yericho. You said whoever takes from the cheirim, kach v'kach v'kach. So Achan didn't listen, took it, and all the Jewish people have to suffer. So Yehoshua says, well, ultimately, excuse me, the Maharsha asked Shaila, well, what do you want from Yehoshua? He's following in the footsteps of who? Moshe Rabbeinu. In Parshat Chukat, happens to be my bar mitzvah Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu makes a cherim on one of the wars that he fights. So, comes Yehoshua and does exactly what his teacher, what his Rebbe, Moshe did. Moshe made a cherim, and he's the Adon HaNeviim, the greatest of all prophets. He's not called Moshe Rabbeinu for nothing. Moshe, our teacher, for nothing. Me, Yehoshua Rabbeinu. They never called Bruce Rabbeinu. They only called Moshe Rabbeinu. So I'm following in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. Marsha says, God said to Yehoshua, something's changed since your Rebbe. What changed? When your Rebbe made a cherem in the Midbar, there wasn't a din called Arvut. Kol Yisrael Arevin Zelazeh. All Israel are Arabs to one another. Excuse me. All Israel are guarantors to one another. What does that mean, guarantors? That means, on a positive note, if Alex did not make Kiddush, because he can't make Kiddush, he can't drink wine, or he can't drink grape juice, or he can't drink anything, my mitzvah is not complete unless I make Kiddush for him. And therefore I can make Kiddush again and again and again, till every last Jew make Kiddush on a Friday night. On a negative note, like an I, if one Jew sins, finish the sentence, everybody's responsible for one another. Everyone's a guarantor. Just like if I'm a guarantor to your mortgage and you can't pay your mortgage, I'm a guarantor. And they can...
What's the source of that? Is this idea?
Kol Yisrael Arevim Zerazeh at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Kof Tet Amud Aleph in 29a. I could be wrong. It might be 30a. On the other side of that same daf is the Mishnah about you don't blow shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah that comes out on Shabbos. So if you look for that Gemara, it's on the Amud Aleph of that Gemara.
Masechta Rosh Hashanah.
Yes. Now, in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, that means negative and positive. Negative and positive is, I can fulfill a mitzvah for you, or help you fulfill your mitzvah, even though I already fulfilled my mitzvah. I made Kiddush already. I can say God's name again and again and again and again till every last Jew has fulfilled their mitzvah. On a negative note, one Jew sins, all the Jewish people have to suffer. Now, in the time, it's a halacha. Of course it's a halacha, because how would I be able to make a bracha for you if I already made a bracha? It's a bracha of a
Tala. My neighbor didn't want to make tradition, like, my yeah. really doesn't count if I don't go and make it.
That's exactly what I believe is the pshat in the Gemara, at least according to the Havana of Rashi. If you don't like that pshat, the bottom line is still the same. Halachically, because of you can say God's name again and again and again until every last Jew make Kiddush. So ultimately, when Moshe Rabbeinu made the Cherem, there was no din like that. So if one Jew took from the Cherem, he'd be punished, not all the Jewish people. But now Yehoshua, you're living in a different reality. In the reality of Arvus. The minute the Jewish people entered Israel, Arvus started. Well, in that new reality, if you make a if you make a cherem, like a Rebbe, imagine what could happen if one Jew cheats. If one Jew cheats, a terrible tragedy of I. So ultimately, the Gemara explicitly says, in the name, in this particular case, Yehoshua, you want to follow in the footsteps of your forebears? There's a way to do it. Look at the reality and say, not, I'm going to do exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu did, my Rebbe, but what would Moshe do in this reality? What would he do now, here, today, based on the Mesorah of the Torah? And it could very well be that if Moshe Rabbeinu, reality of Arvus, he would not, I repeat, not make a chayrim, because he knows the consequences can be disastrous. And therefore, just because my great-great-great-grandfather, whoever it might have been, was a member of this political party or that political party, if I want to continue in his footsteps, it doesn't mean I become a member of that party because he did, but rather, he became a member of that party in one reality, and I now am becoming a member of a party in another reality with the same asara in my hand. To make it tangible, we both go into the same reality with the same books under our arms, or Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, whatever it is, but we can come out with different answers because the reality is different because we're going into two different rooms with two different chickens on the table that we have to paskin on. The same halacha, but the reality is different. One chicken is a trefa and one chicken is not. So ultimately, I believe that Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, etc. have continued in the Mesorah of their father, but the manifestation was different. Yehoshua, he made the manifestation the same, and a terrible tragedy happened. And therefore, today in 2011, we have to always ask ourselves, not what did our forebears do, but rather, what should the question be? What would our forebears do now, today? And that's a tough question. And if life was easy, believe you me, I would go ahead and say, great. I remember in that shir, Rav Herschel Schechter even said something very radical. He wouldn't say it, I wouldn't say it. But he said, just because your kid went with Langa Payas means long payas, to school in Vishnitz, let's say, where everyone went to school in Langa Payas, so he blended in. If he's going to a modern Orthodox school now, somewhere in the world, and he's the only kid with Langa Payas, he looks like a fool. He looks like someone that doesn't blend in. In a reality of everyone going with Langa Payas, you go with Langa Payas. Again, I wouldn't have said that example if not for Rav Herschel Schechter that said it before me. But it really brings out the point that I believe that is, it's not what did my forebears do, but what would they do today? And I firmly believe that if we can look our forebears in the eye and say we're continuing your Mesorah, the only difference is the manifestation, then the Jewish people have a future because the Mesorah continues. If, however, we do either or, either we say, who cares what our forebears did? We're in a new generation. We don't have a future. There's no past. There's no future. And on the other hand, if we just do what they did, we can make disastrous mistakes. Let me ask you, 100 years ago, before the invent of penicillin, what did you do when you were sick? You had a sore throat. You had strep. What did you do? What did you do?
Run with honey, wrapped in a scarf, put a hot water bottle in your heart.
Honey, scarf, hot water bottle,
tea.
An
amulet.
Of course, you forgot the most important Jewish remedy, no?
Davin.
No, Davin, what's the most important Jewish remedy? Goggle muggle. No, what's the most important Jewish remedy?
Oh, chicken soup.
All the above, from chicken soup to hot water. I like to put under one category, make it simple. When you had a strep throat 100 years ago, you suffered. Quietly, vocally, you suffered. That's what you did. There was no penicillin. Today there is penicillin. So you have a strep throat. Would anyone out there be that ignoramus, that moronic, to go ahead and say, well, my grandfather didn't take penicillin, why should I take penicillin? Or would he get a shot of penicillin within a day, he's better, instead of being home for a week? What do you say? They had a reality, and they dealt with it. We have the same, we have a different reality. We have penicillin today. So we use it. It's great. Imagine how much more Torah you can learn because of it. You're not sick in bed for a week, you're sick in bed for a day. This is terrific. It's a new reality. Once upon a time, how did you learn Torah? You went to shul, and you sat down at a table, and someone taught, and you listened, and you learned with yourself. Today, we have 10 more from listening to Shiurim MP3s on the internet. There are many other ways of learning Torah today, by reading articles, by downloading. So, should we say today, the only way to learn Torah is the way they did? Or should we say, Torah is something we have to learn, that's our Mesorah. How we do it might be different. How we do it might be different because reality, indeed, has changed. Ultimately, I believe we have to look our forebears in the eye and say, we're doing it differently, but we're continuing your Mesorah. And therefore, allow me to end the way I began. It could very well be that the former generation ate real Tishka, and that's the way they Mekayim Onik Shabbos. We continue the Mesorah, and we have to fulfill the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. But we can do it in a different way, because we're living in a different reality. Same mitzvah, different manifestation. There's a beautiful saying in Hebrew that I'd like to end with that will sum up this entire lecture. In Hebrew, there's a beautiful saying, Oto Giveret Bishinu, same lady, different dress. Have a good day.